talk now about init systems, because I know that we spoke at length about System D back in episode 0 of this season, and now I want to actually tackle the subject of swapping out an init system. It can be done. You don't have to use the init system that was delivered to you at install time. How hard is that? Well, let's find out. Before we go switching inits around, we should probably talk about one as it happens. So this is a bootloader. So this is a virtual machine, obviously. So in real life, if I had just turned on my computer, the motherboard's BIOS or firmware would have probed around to see what it's supposed to do now that it has power. Since this is a virtual environment, I have some control over that, and I was able to tell it, for instance, the drive that it should boot. Actually, and I can't read it now because I made it too big. So the drive to boot should be... where is that argument? Here it is. Boot order is C, so it's supposed to boot the C drive initially. And the drive attached to the first bus on that computer, on this virtual computer, is a file called slackinit.qcow2. So as far as this little virtual machine knows, that's a hard drive. So that's what got us here, was all sort of like firmware stuff looking to where it should boot. And so it finds this virtual hard drive, and it sees that there's this bootloader, so it loads that up. And I've got one selection here called Linux. Now I'm going to hit Tab so that I can edit my boot arguments. And I'm going to say, yeah, I want to boot Linux, but I also want to do it so with no mode set, so that no NVIDIA firmware gets incorporated. I don't think it would try to do that, but just making sure. So now I'll hit Return, and we see that it's loading Linux, and it's decompressing the kernel, and it's decompressing Linux. It's parsing it, and now it starts spitting a bunch of messages out to us. So what's happening at this point is that the kernel was loaded, and now the code told it, okay, now look for the init file. Now the init file, by default, is /sbin/init. And /sbin/init lives, obviously, on a very an accessible partition, so that when it boots, it can find /sbin. That's kind of mounted very early on, and it runs. And what sbin runs is, well, it does what it does, but pretty quickly it probes to find out what run level it has been set to. And so it boots, and it goes through all of these different scripts, at least the ones that are executable, and it brings up different services. So it might bring up message bus, it might bring up wicked, not in this order, any systemv init scripts that I might have lying around, and so on. So at the end of that process, wow, it's still going. Virtual machines are not fast. So at the end of all that process, it looks to see what its default, there it goes, what its default run level should be, like the end goal. And if it is RC4, or if it's run level 4 rather, that's the, in Slackware at least, that's the multi-user graphical run level. So it would then, it would continue and launch some kind of X server, graphical login. But this is not set to that. I will log in, and I can prove to you that it's not set to that. And I don't know if you can see this or not. In fact, I should probably... So I will SSH... Can I do this? I don't know if I can do this. Yes, I can. So now I've logged in as root, because it's just a virtual machine. It doesn't really matter. So I think what I did was grep C2 for run level in slash init tab, and we get the fact that the default run level is, in this case, 3. And it has this handy little message up here that says 3 is multi-user mode, but it's just the default Slackware run level, whereas run level 4 is X11, so that would launch either KDM or XDM. I don't even think it ships with GDM. I think that's a lie. So that's, you know, and it might be different on your system. It doesn't really, you know, I'm not trying to teach you the specifics so much as I am just showing you how that works. There's a fantastic episode on this subject on Hacker Public Radio by Dan Washko of Linux Link Tech Show. It's a series, actually. He goes through every step of the way. It's really, really informative. I highly recommend it. Okay, so we're here, and I was saying that, yes, there are many run levels out there, or init systems out there, and we're going to try out Ninit. So what we'll do first is download the source code. wget-q capital O dash, and then the source code address, the URL. And then we'll pipe that through tar xvj, because it's a bz2, not a gz, a gzip. Okay, there's that. Now we're also going to grab a demonstration file that this guy posted, the author, and this is all coming from riemann.fmi.uni-sophia.bg/ninit. I'll post that URL at some point in the show notes. And so we'll just do a wget --q O- and then the source code, and then we'll pipe that through tar xvz this time. And all I'm doing there is, you know, I'm downloading the package with wget, and instead of just saving that directly onto my hard drive, I'm sending the packets that I'm downloading through tar to decompress, which leaves me with our ninit-0.14 and etsy. First of all, let's just prove that we're not running ninit right now, and the way that I'm going to do that is ps --p1, which searches the processes, active processes, by the process number of 1, and that shows that it is indeed init. So in other words, ninit does not currently exist on my system, and it is not running. That's just to let you know. All right, so we change directory into ninit-0.14, and we should probably read the README. And it kind of gives us a rundown of all the different the different files that we can use in our init scripts, or our ninit scripts, I guess, as the case may be. Yeah, so it gives you a little bit of information on how you're supposed to build all this stuff. And the way that you do build all this stuff is you just make, but there's a very specific kind of make that you need to do, because by default, ninit wants to build against dietlibc. And dietlibc is a pretty cool little optimized C library that, you know, I mean, it's going to be smaller, lighter weight, I guess, supposedly faster, and of course they claim it's more secure than glibc, which is the standard C library on most systems. There's libc right there. So dietlibc is kind of the method that this author wants you to build it with. And you can do that, but for the sake of this demonstration, I'm just going to do really quickly. I'm going to make the diet build. No, I'm going to make the no diet build. In other words, I'm not going to be making this with dietlibc. Actually, I'm going to chown. Can I do that? Can I chown this stuff to clat2 users? So I just realized it's not going to want me to do any of this as root, actually. Forgot about that. I think that's all. So I'm gonna switch over to the Clat2 user. There's the fortune of the day. So I'll issue make no diet. Okay, we're done, and it's telling us to make tests. So we'll make tests and see what happens. And so basically what it's doing is it's launching and trying out the local builds that it had just, you know, that it just created. Okay, so that's it passed all of its tests. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to do this the right way, even though this is a virtual machine and it doesn't really matter. So the way that I'm doing this on Slackware is the way that you would do it on Slackware. The way that you would do it on some other system, assuming that I'm still in, I'm not. So I'll go back to the source code place. You see all these new green listings with asterisks after their name. These are the new executables that we got built from the build process that we just did. So we need to put those into our system. So we will install this, but if you look at the make file and kind of look through it, which typically I like to do, especially to the place where they're getting down to the installs. Let's just do a search for install really quick. There are commands here, somewhere. Here we go. Install. So that installs stuff, install other, installs more stuff, start tests, services. So here's the one that I looked at and kind of liked. It's called distro. And that's obviously for packaging. So what it does is it creates a directory in temp called ninit.distro. It puts all the man pages there. It makes the install with the extra flag of destdir equaling temp ninit distro. Now what that does is instead of placing all of those files, well, I'll show you. So we're going to make, it was make install space distro. So you might have seen a warning go by, and it said that it might overwrite things and all these other things, but it was lying to us, and I'll show you why. So if I go to cd /temp/ninit.distro, then you see that everything that would have been installed to our system was actually installed to /temp. Which is quite nice, because that quarantines it for us. We can look at it, we can see what's going to get installed, and if you're on Slackware or any really Red Hat or Debian system, you can, if you install this application, I don't have it installed, but if you install it, you can use it, and it's quite worth using. It's called check install, and what that does is generate a package for you so that you can then install it, and if you later want to uninstall it, you can do that as well. So check out check install. It's well worth looking at. I'm going to do this the Slackware way and execute this command. It's a lot like check install, or maybe check install is a lot like it. I'm not really sure. And all I'm doing is make pkg /temp/ninit0.14-x86_64-, I'll just give it a Clat2 tag and TGZ as the extension. And what that does is it bundles up everything in the current directory into a nice, neat little Slackware package. And now I can use install pkg /temp/ninit-014, blah blah blah, TGZ. Now, if you were doing this with check install, you would have done just a check install, and it would have generated and installed all in one step. Okay, now it's installed. So if I do a which ninit, for instance, it should find it, and it does. It's in /sbin/ninit. Another thing that it installs for us is this directory in /etc called ninit, and so that's where it keeps all of its startup scripts, which makes sense, really, if you think about it on Slack, where all the startup scripts are kept in /etc/rc.d, and on Debian and, well, on systemv init style systems, it's /etc/init.delta. So it makes sense that that's where this would be, but if you notice, when I do an ls of ninit, /etc/ninit, there's really only, like, sort of two files in it. I don't know if this will tell us exactly what this file is. It might not. Yes, it does. So this is a FIFO, and that's there are two of those in /etc/init, in and out. So it's a first in, first out special file, a named pipe. There you go. So those are basically useless to us, but they're very important to ninit. And then there's also this sys directory in /etc/ninit, which seems to remove contain some rather important applications, but it's not quite enough for us to get things up and running yet. So I happen to know that in order to get this all started quickly, and this is where ninit really kind of excels in my limitedly informed opinion, this is certainly a nice feature, let's put it that way. Run it, you had to write your own scripts pretty much from the ground up. So on this, it's going to give us a little bit of a kickstart. Not huge, but enough. So there's this command called ninit-init-tab, and we'll run it with just help first. And it's telling us that the usage is ninit-init-tab, and then if you have something special, like a special init script, you can provide that. We don't. So we'll just use the rest of the arguments, which are /etc/init-tab. So that's sensible, right? We have our init tab there. Yeah, we do. And then /etc/ninit, and that's obviously our configuration directory. And then output file, and that's a little bit confusing. Luckily, I've done this before, so I kind of know what to expect. And what it's going to provide us is a shell script. So let's run this. Ninit, it's going to build something for us. So ninit-init-tab /etc/init-tab /etc/ninit, and then an output file. So I'll just call this build services.sh. So what it did there is, very quickly, it just kind of scanned through our existing init system, and it kind of figured out what exactly, you know, what kind of init services, what kind of init scripts we already have, and it generated a script to generate that stuff for us. So if we do a less on build services, you can kind of get an idea of what's going on. I mean, if you look at it, I'm not going to sit here and go through it with you myself right now, but if you do look at it, you'll kind of get a feel for how it's created itself. It's pretty cool. So at this point, we'll run it. So that's /buildservices.sh, and that's finished. And now if I do a list on /etc/ninit, you're going to see a lot more than what we saw before. So before, we only had the in and the out pipes, and then this little lonely sys folder. Now we've got quite a lot more. And like this underscore L0 and L6, that's level 0, level 6, so that's reboot, or halt and reboot. I know that the underscore X1 is our multi-user run level 4 folder. We've got some symlinks in here. The halt, I'm imagining... Do I have this? No. The halt, I imagine, is a symlink over to L0. Level 0 is to underscore L0. Where's the reboot? Yeah, reboot is a symlink to underscore L6. So basically what we have are the basic services that we would need, you know, just bare bones system, they're all here, which is really, really nice, because that means that we can reboot right now just to make sure this is all running. Yeah, so let's reboot. That'll kick me out of the big shell, so we'll have to go to the small shell for a moment. And here we are at login. So let's see. Let's log in with our fake password. But yeah, so ninit. We're on ninit now. So let's just see if we've got. Well, first of all, so in SVC is the service manager for Ninit. So this would be, for instance, like if you were on, well, if you were on Slackware, you would say rc dot, I don't know, network, well, wicked, sorry, rc dot wicked, or wireless, I guess. I thought I had wicked starting up. Well, whatever. Oh, this is a virtual machine. What am I thinking? Rc dot wireless, you know, stop or start or whatever. On some other systems, it would be service, I don't know, sshd start or stop or restart or whatever. So on this one, it's in SVC, as in Ninit service. So in SVC, run without anything, gives you a help menu. And the thing that I'm looking for, I guess, is probably just a list of all of everything that's running, which is dash L, I guess. I don't know if that'll actually, yeah. So this is the stuff that's running. Unfortunately, I don't know what all of these are. But it certainly did spawn some processes. We can ascertain that. And let's do a netstat and see what's going on. We do obviously have SSH running, which is pretty fancy. And because I say obviously because I'm SSH'd into this machine here. So that's nice. So the networking stack is obviously alive. So it started like, I mean, you know, all told, it started a pretty healthy number of services for having zero configuration. I mean, all we did was run an automatic script that built Ninit services from the already existing BSD services on our system, and we're up and running with a completely new system, a Ninit system. The thing is that if you are a purist, you'll kind of realize that it's not quite as Ninity as it could be. So let's go into let's go into the reboot one, which is the master reboot. I think it's, or the halt even. Let's go here. So I'll show you what I mean by saying that it's not quite as pure as it could be. So this is how, and it's good that it's not pure, because I can show you now how you can, you know, this is the thing that you would do with Runit before you could even reboot and start running Runit, is you would sit here and build your build scripts. And all of these alternate init sequences seem to have a more or less a fairly similar way of handling this stuff. And the basic idea is that in order to create a new service, all you do is make a directory. So if you make a directory, then that's a service, and you can then call on that service within service. It's really that simple, which is really, really neat. So, for instance, I happen to know that the level zero, run level zero process, that directory consists of four files, one of which is a symlink, and the four files are environ, params, run, and setup. And this is pretty consistent. There's a few other options that you can have which are definitely worth mentioning. For instance, if you were setting up an SSHD init script for yourself, you can put, all you have to do is touch a file in the service directory called respawn. And respawn, in fact, there's probably one, I would imagine, let me see if I can find one with respawn. Yeah, so C1 is the login for, like, you know, the TTY login shell. That's what C1 through 6 are. So Control-Alt-F, F1, F2, F3, so on. I can't do that on the recording because it wouldn't pick that up, but all of that stuff, all of those are called TTYs. They're run by this application called Getty, or actually a Getty, I think, on most systems these days. It seems to be pretty popular, /sbin/agetty. So those are all started by Ninit, obviously, because that's how they get started, is the init sequence. And you don't really want them to die, necessarily. I mean, if you want them to... If they die, then you should... It's kind of nice for something to respawn them. So in Ninit, all you have to do for a service to be what they call supervised is make sure that you've got a file in that service's directory called respawn. And it doesn't even have to say anything in it. It's just literally a zero-byte file called respawn. And if Ninit or in service really sees that file in that directory, it knows that it's going to monitor the status of that application, and if it crashes and goes down, it respawns it. So that's really, really neat. Or if you quit it or whatever. Alright. So anyway, back to this one. So typically you're going to have at least, I would say typically, well, the bare minimum would be the run script, I guess. And run is very frequently just a symlink. And in this case, since this is a run level 0 script, it's actually linked to a file, or an application rather, called ninit run level. So that in our old language would have been telinit. So do you have to use ninit run level? Well, no, not really. I mean, if I typed in telinit 0 and hit return, that would definitely reboot this virtual machine. But that's why I'm saying we're kind of running in this hybrid mode. So if you were going to continue down the ninit road, then you would want to start leveraging these applications that are specific to ninit, and certainly would feel a lot more integrated that way. But at this point, I guess, given that we've rebooted and we've got a basic running system, technically speaking, all of this is academic, but then again, it's not, because you do want, you know, if you're going to use it, you would want to know how to do the rest of the stuff. So anyway, run is a symlink to ninit run level. So in other words, when you type in service _L0, which I'm not going to hit return on, then what it would do is it looks into the directory by the name of the service that you gave it, and it runs the executable named run there. Well, actually, first it runs setup. If a file called setup exists, it first runs that. And you can always look at all this stuff yourself in the source code, in the README file. It explains all of this stuff. So if setup exists, it runs that first. And this does exist, so it runs it. It's a little shell script. It's 4 lines. Shebangs bin shell all equals the results of /bin/in-service -L. Now we've run that before, if you'll recall. That was the listing of all the services that are currently running, and then it runs the in-service -C0. So the capital C is the time, so that would be basically -C0 is like saying now in halt or shutdown. It's so you're doing that right now, and then you are setting you're toggling off the respawnability of each service. That's a big deal. You kind of have to do that, because remember, part of what ninit does is it respawns stuff if they go down. So if you tell everything to shut down, then in-service will naturally, unless you tell it otherwise, which is what this line does, then it would try to respawn them. So that's kind of an important step, obviously. So that's what setup does. Run, of course, executes run level, but then what we have here is an environ file. So this gets executed before run, or rather it gets entered before run. So if we were building a command, it would be init halt power down, and then whatever run points to, and then the params. So for instance, if we cat params, then we see that it's a new line delimited file giving us 2 different arguments. One argument is 0, which is of course the run level, and the next argument is the file to execute, which is /etc/rc.d/rc.0. So in other words, it's just a wrapper basically around an existing file, which is rc.0. So we're cheating essentially. We're using ninit run level to set our run level to 0, and then we're executing what Patrick Volterding and another guy, whose name I'm forgetting right now, but we'll see it in a minute, has defined for us. So, you know, it's kind of, yes, we're using init, but we're really calling just all the pre-existing startup files in our RC, or our init files in rc.delta, or init if you run it on a system V init system. So that might be kind of nice to change, and we can change that by doing, for instance, an emacs params. I guess we can keep the zero, but just for fun, let's say that we were going to do an init. I'm trying to think of something that would. Let's call it rc.shutdown. And we'll save that. So now if we go to init slash etc slash init and we open up a file called rc.shutdown. And then what I'm going to do is cheat, and I'm just going to import, and bear with me, I'm not doing what you think I'm doing, I don't think. I'm going to import, I'm going to read in the slash etc slash rc.delta slash rc.0 file. So I'm, again, cheating, but we'll tweak it a little bit. Okay, so here's this little file. It was by Mikkel von Schmurenberg and Patrick Volkreding, and now I'm modifying it for init. So I don't know for a fact that I'm not running any sysv init scripts at the moment, so I'm going to leave that one alone. I don't really care about how pretty this is. The echo running shutdown script, I don't care about that. I'm going to make this a dedicated shutdown script, so I'm getting rid of all the conditionals about whether it's a shutdown or a reboot. This is important stuff, this big block of code for clock stuff. So I'm going to save it, but I am going to just simplify it because I'm going to assume that all of that stuff is going well. In real life, I would be a lot more careful about all of this stuff, but for now, since I'm just trying to demonstrate, we're going to do it pretty sloppy. The Apache web server, I'm not running MySQL. Samba, none of those things I'm going to be running on this little virtual server, or this virtual machine. Now, if you're not running Slackware, you can find examples of shutdown scripts from Linux, from Scratch, or Gentoo, or Arch, or Dragora. All of those have, you know, a set of shutdown scripts that you could borrow. Or you could adapt, I should say. You would not want to just borrow straight out of the box. I mean, I don't think anything would necessarily go horribly wrong, but to some degree, like, it could go mildly wrong and just not be as graceful in its shutdown process. And if you were going to do this on a real machine for actual production use, you obviously want to be doing this correctly. And I'm leaving a bunch of the stuff that I don't normally use on my real systems, and I know that the command hasn't been reboot, so we're going to just issue sbin power off as our final command. So that is rc.shutdown, and now level 0 should point to that. And then of course we'll need to make this rc.shutdown executable, and now ideally we should be able to say in service up halt, I think, because if you'll recall, the halt command, the halt service, is just a symlink over to run level 0, so that should call this all off. So I hope you've gotten a lot out of this, because we're about to blow it all away, or shut it all down, I guess. And there it goes. As you can see, the virtual machine is shutting itself down, you know, semi-gracefully, I think. There's probably some stuff maybe that I... No, I don't think so, actually. I think it's pretty graceful, to be honest. It's doing all the normal things, like the, all the writing out the random seed and stopping all of the processes and unmounting the the file system. So yeah, I think it's actually pretty nice. And the only advantage there, the only thing that we've gained from that exercise really is that now we've got Ninit specific scripts, meaning that we can use Ninit specific binaries to call those scripts. In other words, we're building an actual Ninit system rather than running a quick and dirty hybrid of Ninit binaries and wrapper scripts that just call the scripts that were already on our system anyway. Not necessarily a huge big deal, but kind of nice to kind of explore. So there you go. That's and I mean, run it kind of, I guess, forces you into that. But there you go. It's halted. It's over. It's finished. That is, those are init alternatives. One more time, init, run it, and S6 for fun. At least run it in init. I can definitely vouch for. I've run both of those on a hardware box, just a couple of weeks each, just for testing purposes. And the S6 I was gonna mess around with and probably will eventually. So hopefully this has been informative. Thank you very much. And there you go. It's now running a completely different init system than what was shipped to us. And now you see how potentially easy it is to swap out very, very important and low-level parts of your system on an open-source operating environment. Granted, this does not get around the fear in terms of systemd, the fear that some other technologies higher up in the chain will, at some point start relying exclusively on systemd and literally remove the ability to swap out your init system and still use that application. The big fear I think that I keep hearing about is ConsoleKit, I think is what it's called, and I think that's the thing that the login screen of GNOME 3 depends on. I could be getting some of the details incorrect. Point being, people are kind of afraid of, like, of getting systemd shipped on the system, but in order to run the GNOME desktop at all, it has to have systemd, and so people lose the GNOME, the entirety of the GNOME desktop. Now, whether or not that'll matter in the long run to people who are willing to sacrifice GNOME, whether or not that'll even happen, as far as I know, is still a question. But whether or not that matters, I mean, again, lately I've been playing around with Cinnamon, not on Slackware, although there's a Slack build for it, and it's a pretty nice desktop, and I think it uses GNOME 3 technologies. So, I mean, if you're not married to the GNOME desktop, and you just want to use, GNOME 3 technology, then, I mean, that might be the answer right there. I don't know. No one knows how all of this is going to turn out. But now at least you do know how to take your system, your open source system, and swap out the init system, so that you don't have to feel trapped by systemd. It's a very cool ability. It's really good to know how to do that. And hopefully it's empowering, so, and comforting. Okay, I think that's it for this episode. Thank you very much for listening, as always. My name is Klaatu. You can find me online at GNUWorldOrder.info or at SlackerMedia.info. You can find me via email at klaatu@member.fsf.org. That's member.fsf, as in Free Software Foundation, .org. And you can also find me on linuxquestions.org as not klaatu. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you next time.
speeds will help to accomplish one of man's long-sought goals.